Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. October 24, 2021. Everyone sees a different world. We all look at the world with the same eyes and see the same thing. But besides eyes, we also have a mind that depicts what we see to us. The mind is different for everyone because it serves the will to receive. To the extent that we can add the will to bestow to it, we will see the world through the contrast of these two qualities, reception and bestowal, and then we will begin to reveal the true picture of the world. This is the difference between people in the world because everyone is very different in their minds. Although we all have the same eyes and it seems to us that we should see the same thing, none of us sees the same picture. After all, everything depends on the mechanism behind the eyes and behind all the other sensations, smell, hearing, speech, texts we read, that is, all the information about the world perceived by a person. All information is processed in the brain, and everyone has their own mind. This is why no one can understand one another. The more we feel our loneliness, the more we can see. After all, this reduces our egoism and then we can better see the Creator and His bestowal to the world. It seems conflicting and contradicts ordinary perception and ordinary education. However, the lower a person puts himself with respect to his correct perception and the more clearly he understands that he does not understand, the more he is ready to see the truth. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson October 19, 2021, Writings of Balha Sulam, Shemati number 26. One's future depends and is tied to gratitude for the past. How to calm the nature that has turned against us. Spiritual work can bring inspiration and pleasure even before a person comes to their revelation of the Creator if we inspire each other with the greatness of the goal and the importance of the group on the background of the crisis that we see in the world and the despair and confusion that has fallen over humanity. If previously there were periods of relative calm and prosperous life when people could travel and have fun, today everyone is in fear for their present and future, and have already gotten used to living under such pressure from nature. Volcanic eruptions, extreme heat and cold, floods, earthquakes, wars, epidemics, it seems that all of nature has turned against us. I do not remember when during the 75 years of my life people have been so worried about their existence as in the last decade. Previously people were afraid of the world war. However, there has never been such a threat from natural disasters, which are much worse than war. After all, we are not able to prevent them through our usual means, but only by correcting the relationship between us. And humanity does not understand this yet. All the problems that we hear about today and that will soon reach us, hurricanes, heat and cold waves, and earthquakes, are reactions of nature. Today, when humanity has become global and affects the world on a global scale, we have to connect, and we do not do this. By this lack of connection, which should be between us, we influence nature and the earth, which react accordingly. Therefore, it is time to finally understand that only through our ever more powerful and perfect connection can we calm nature and achieve a beautiful, magnificent life. If not, then nature will teach us, by the blows that have already begun. Therefore, we want to help humanity by disseminating the method of correction and explaining what the true cure for all catastrophes, including pandemics and other natural disasters, is. After all, everything comes from nature, the Creator is nature, and everything comes from Him. And our job is to convey this to people. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson October 16, 2021. Balha Sulam. Shemati, 20 Lishma, for her sake. The Creator does not change His plans. If the world is in such a critical state, then why would the Creator not ignite a burning interest in the science of Kabbalah in large masses of people to push the world to correction? The fact is that the Creator organizes the world according to the large egoism that we need to correct. He does not choose desires and does not force them. The system that He created at the beginning of creation, all its conditions unfold and are realized in the course of the entire history. The Creator is not going to revise and change the action of creation in the middle of the process, and He will not compromise. We are inside the system and we must determine through our own efforts which forces in it should be greater and which should be less, and how to use these forces to bring us to the right connection. We are not cancelling any forces. Everything remains, both evil forces and large egoism. Nothing is destroyed, as we would like. One exists against the other and it is only necessary to increase the power of bestowal relative to the power of reception, the power of good relative to the power of evil. Only in this form will we achieve a balance between these two systems. And when they gradually come to balance, then between these two, within their correct combination, we will reveal the force of the Creator. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson October 19, 2021, Writings of Baal HaSulam, Shemati No. 26. One's future depends and is tied to gratitude for the past. My new article on LinkedIn, despite its appeal to young Americans, socialism is not the answer. A recent Axios Momentive poll revealed that among young Americans between the ages 18-24, views are shifting toward favoring socialism to capitalism. According to the survey, cited also by the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, among adults in Gen Z, ages 18-24, perceptions of capitalism are truly underwater. 42% have a positive view and 54% have a negative view. Moreover, even 18-34-year-olds are almost evenly split between those who view capitalism positively and those who view it negatively, 49% versus 46%. 2 years ago, that margin was a gaping 20 points, 58% versus 38%. I understand people's disappointment with capitalism, but socialism will not solve their problems. For one, our egos grow continuously, and if a certain regime succeeded at one point in history, it will not succeed in the future since it will not be suitable for people's bigger egos. Second, Americans are raised with such a self-centered mindset that for them to adopt socialism today is simply not something they can do. At the same time, capitalism also isn't working anymore, and for the same reason, our growing ego. We've become so self-absorbed that nothing balances our behavior and the principles of free market and competition have become a winner-take-all contest, where the winners use and abuse everyone else. The solution to our woes is in neither ideology, but in a new type of economy. The economy reflects the state of our society. Accordingly, to enjoy a thriving economy, we must have a thriving society. A society that is built on constant struggles, suspicion, and ill will, cannot thrive. It will disintegrate, and the economy, which relies on the quality of connections among people, will collapse. Having an economy that guarantees people's well-being requires care about each other's well-being. Establishing care and mutual responsibility must therefore be the top priority in every society, and the main focus of every future economic model. People will still want to realize their dreams and express their unique skills and traits, but they will be happy to do it for the common good. Besides the satisfaction of realizing their potential, they will enjoy the recognition and gratitude of society for their contribution. There will, of course, be a monetary system, but making a lot of money will not be people's main incentive. Their present and future livelihoods will be secured by society, which will free them to realize their unique characteristics in a manner that supports all of society. Since contribution to society will win people's society's respect, while exploitation of it will result in harsh reproof and condemnation, people will do their best to advance the society, and everyone will benefit from their efforts. In this way, we will learn to care for others, while they care for us. And the better we become at doing so, the happier we will be. My new article on LinkedIn, People Are an Open Book, How to Read It. In Copenhagen, the capital of Denmark, there is an original library that is gaining momentum around the world and is called the Human Library. Here people do not come to borrow books but to ask human beings to share the story of their lives. Anyone can come in and choose a person whose worldview or lifestyle is intriguing, such as a refugee or AIDS patient, a Tibetan monk, or a PTSD suffering soldier, transgender, or drug addict, and simply have a conversation with them for 30 minutes. In a well-kept green garden in the heart of the city, the interviewees will tell the story of their lives openly and calmly, and the reader can freely ask questions, and engage in dialogue. The premise is to meet live people commonly persecuted and to confront them without prejudice or taboos. Hypothetically, if we could listen to all the stories of all the people in the world, whatever and whoever they are, we would discover a common thing: they are all stories of disruption and are a result of their environment's impact on them, the education they received as children, and the society that shaped them over the years. In a divided and polarized world, it sounds as if a tolerance-building human library initiative could help people, both the narrator and the listener, but it can only confuse them both. The narrator speaks from his or her gaze, imprisoned in their own narrative, because no private life story really leads to reading our great and shared story, the one that ends in a happy humanity. Our common story begins with the plan of creation, a pre-existing and constantly running plan that directs everything in the entire system of nature and humanity. Starting from the Big Bang, from the spread of an infinite number of particles in the inanimate, vegetative, animate, and human degrees, creation continues to connect all its parts, to collect and group all its details, and to bring unity between all creatures and the feeling of the wonderful harmonious power of creation. That's the whole story. The plot is complicated by the increasing egoistic nature in every person, another factor that stems from creation's natural evolution, which strengthens our sense of individuality, separates us from others, and makes us feel superior to the rest. Therefore, the shared story is overlooked. As a result, speakers in the Human Library brand their life story as a bestseller, and it proudly inflates and reflects their life experience as if they were real acts of heroism. Instead of seeing how our inborn human egotistical nature, the evil instinct operating in everyone from an early age for the destruction of the other, has led us, as a human society, to abuse others. The narrator will naturally soften the problem, color it in a certain hue, give others advice that they are unlikely to follow, and the personal example may confuse the listener. Instead of being impressed by the pervasive egoism that rules society and prevents us from reaching the purpose of creation and recognizing that we have deviated from the purpose of life, we only praise the lifestyles we have created and perpetuate them in beautiful words and define them as the essence of life. There is no prevention or prohibition of cordial human conversation, nor is there room to undo the identity of each and every one, but the most important thing is to find and highlight in these personal stories the same hidden point that arises in the search for the whole story, a story of reconnection, a story of humanity's friendly and supportive relations. This book is for any and everyone to open. My new article on LinkedIn, China and the Impact of Cross-Border Capitalism. All over the world, China is buying, building, and operating strategic assets. In Israel, for example, it now owns NuVa, the largest and most powerful producer and marketer of dairy products. China is also building two new harbors, and is already operating one of them, as well as the new metropolitan railway system in the center of the country. The same process is happening in many countries in Latin America, where China is in fierce competition against the US. Cross-border capitalism, where wealthy and powerful countries use their revenues to generate more wealth and increase their influence in other countries, may create conflicts and tensions, but I don't think we can avoid it. The question is not whether it is right or wrong, whether we can or should stop it, but how countries should conduct themselves in this situation, which is here to stay. On the one hand, it is human nature to want to use whatever surplus proceeds I have to increase my wealth and my power. We should not be so naive as to think that countries have any altruistic motives when it comes to business and power. On the other hand, it is not necessarily bad that rich countries are buying assets and building large infrastructure projects in countries where they themselves would likely not have been able to carry out otherwise. Just as capitalism helps build economies within countries, cross-border capitalism can help build the global economy. And since capitalist countries naturally want to take over anything they put their hands on, it is up to the host countries to restrain their ability to get their way. As long as the line between economic contribution to a country and economic occupation of it is kept, I see more good than harm in cross-border capitalism. As a rule, I see the mingling of cultures and ethnicities as a positive development. After all, the world is going toward increased connection and global unity, in synchrony with all of reality. We may not like the ideas of unity or connection, but it is only because egoism governs us. Nevertheless, this trajectory is irreversible and in the end, positive, as it strengthens everyone involved. We can come to unity in one of two ways, voluntarily or involuntarily. The economic takeover is more in line with the voluntary way. It is certainly better than military conflicts, occupations and counter-occupations, and occasional annihilation of nations and ethnic groups, which had been humanity's way until World War II exposed its cost with today's nuclear technologies. Either way, the days of the nation-state are ending. The whole concept of sovereignty exposes itself as nothing more than a fight over territory, a flag, and an anthem. It is absolute selfishness, and regular people get no benefits from battles over sovereignty. In the end, everyone exploits them. As the world moves toward collective governance, though still with egoistic motivations, new rules will gradually emerge. While there is no doubt that countries will try to achieve global governance, as this is human nature, there is no other way to begin this process. Without selfish motivation, no country will lift a finger to help another country. At the same time, we should be very careful not to let any one country become the sole ruler of the world. To achieve this, we need to integrate education toward collaboration into the process of global mingling. We all need this education, children and grown-ups alike, since none of us have ever lived in a world where everyone depends on everyone else, and is therefore responsible for everyone else. Therefore, first we must learn about the necessity to maintain mutual responsibility. Then, we will begin to see how mutual responsibility and interdependence lead to mutual concern for one another. Once we start developing positive feelings toward each other, we will transcend our selfish nature and a new network of relationships among us will manifest, based on care and empathy. In this network, there will be no borders, regulations, or monitoring, since our care for one another will guide us toward helping others rather than harming or otherwise exploiting them. In that state, cross-border capitalism will be obsolete, since there will be neither borders nor capitalism, but a new, care-based economy. Michael Lateman, on Quora, do you agree with Daniel Craig's decision not to leave a large sum of money to his children as inheritance? By giving children more than what they need in order to start building themselves, it will just corrupt them in the end. Love encompasses giving your children opportunities to develop, to enjoy the fruits of their own labor, by providing them with a good education and a profession that they will enjoy and make a living from. A father's love is expressed through encouragement and motivation, that is, in giving the first push. The children will not understand this at the time of the push, but the understanding will settle later. based on should you leave your children a big inheritance? Kabbalist's View with Dr. Michael Laitman. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Laitman. My new article on LinkedIn, Prince William's Call to Forget Space and Focus on Earth Won't Save It. In an interview on NBC News, Prince William said that we need the greatest brains and minds fixed on trying to repair this planet, not trying to find the next place to go and live. Adding that we are seeing a rise in climate anxiety, Prince William stressed that young people now are growing where their futures are basically threatened the whole time. It's true that the future looks grim, but repairing the Earth won't help since there is nothing wrong with it. There is a lot that is wrong with the people who live on it. They are the cause of Earth's malfunctions and they are the ones who need fixing. Any other idea is pointless, and a waste of time that will create even greater harm to the planet. If Prince William, and other movers and shakers, begins to push for unity among all people, to rise above our differences and the pollution of Earth's water, soil, and air, and the depletion of its resources, are just two forms of exploitation out of countless that the human race is inflicting everywhere. We inflict the same level of harm on our own species, on disadvantaged nations and ethnic groups, as well as on other animals, birds, and fish. In fact, we inflict harm wherever we go and whatever we do. The basis of all our relationships is self-interest. Such a basis dictates only two attitudes toward everything around us, use it or flee from it. In effect, it is a state of constant war, which we are mostly unaware of, except for rare moments of sincerity with ourselves. Because this is our only motivation, we are sickening not just the earth, but every realm of human engagement. To understand the harm in our self-centered attitude, think of cancer cells. These rogue cells grow without regard for the cells around them, snatch blood vessels to get as much nutrients and oxygen as possible, and as a result, starve the cells around them and kill the organs where they grow. Afterwards, they migrate to other organs and inflict the same harm there until the body dies along with the cancer. We have already metastasized throughout the planet. We have contaminated everything, place, and engagement with our malignant attitude, and now we are starting to realize that we are about to die along with our planet. But focusing on one symptom, even one as painful as climate change, will not cure the cancer, which is our own ego. To cure our egos, we must accept the diagnosis that our ego is the problem, and resolve to fight against it shoulder to shoulder. If Prince William, and other movers and shakers, begins to push for unity among all people, to rise above our differences and establish care and concern among all people, we will see a real change for the better. We are all one complete system, just like our bodies are complete systems. So as long as we enshrine the me culture, nothing will change. If we don't accept that we must teach ourselves to care about others and develop mutual responsibility, rather than responsibility only for ourselves, then we'd best prepare for the worst. My new article on LinkedIn, When Jews Turn on Jews, So Does Netflix. Last week, Netflix launched a new collection of Palestinian films professing to portray the truth about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But with 89% of the films being directed by BDS supporters, there is little hope that there will be any attempt to present a truthful, let alone balanced picture of reality. The films, which play on people's most vulnerable emotional triggers, are bound to create even stronger anti-Israel sentiments than people feel already. I share the frustration of those trying to fight against the demonization of Israel. However, I think that we are shooting ourselves in the foot by trying to explain ourselves instead of addressing our division, which is the root cause of the hatred toward us. From the history of our people, and from the words of our sages at every generation, we know that the people of Israel determine their own destiny. The Book of Zohar, Pinhas 64, writes that Israel are not subject to fate or to luck. The Talmud, Shabbat 156a, states that Israel have no fate, meaning that they are not bound by it, and other sources state likewise. When you look at how the world treats Jews, it is easy to see that we are always singled out, usually for condemnation. Jews were condemned before they were allowed to mingle with the nations in the diaspora. Jews were singled out before there was a Jewish state. Jews are singled out now that there is a state. And if the Jewish state ceases to exist and a Palestinian state is established in its place, they will still be singled out for condemnation. Jews have been persecuted and executed for different reasons at different times because the root of Jew hatred has nothing to do with the present circumstances of the Jews, but with their eternal duty. Until they carry it out, the world will hate them and despise them. When they carry it out, the world will love and appreciate them. The world is not wrong in its attitude toward the Jews. We are not like other people. The nations judge us by a different standard, not because they are anti-Semitic, but because we became a nation in order to set a different standard for the world. The world judges us by the standard we are meant to achieve, and not by the standards it judges the rest of the nations. The standard that the world uses to judge us is the standard of unity. When we are united, we are praised. When we are divided, we are condemned. We became a nation only when we agreed to unite as one man with one heart, and we were immediately tasked with being a light unto nations. Only when we display unity, we are a light to the nations. When we are divided, we spread darkness and the world hates us for it. According to the book Sifrei Devarim, in antiquity, when Jews celebrated their unity during the festivals of pilgrimage, people from the world over would go up to Jerusalem and see Israel and say, "It is becoming to cling only to this nation." Conversely, the Talmud, Yoma 9b, explains that Nebuchadnezzar conquered Israel and destroyed the first temple because the people of Israel spoke to one another with daggers in their tongues. Similarly, the second temple was destroyed by Sinat-Hinam, unfounded hatred, hatred for no reason, say all our sages. Our cataclysms throughout history have all followed prolonged periods of division and self-hatred. I have spoken to prominent Israeli academics who are active in the BDS movement. I saw how adamant they are in their objection to the state of Israel. In my view, subconsciously, they are trying to protect themselves by showing hatred for their own people. However, condemning their own nation and their own people will not help them escape the world's wrath. Only our unity, precisely above those deep chasms that splinter the Israeli society, will earn us the world's favor. We have to focus on educating ourselves on the importance of internal unity. This is the only thing we can or should do. If more Israelis understand the unique role of our people, the level of cohesion and solidarity that our nation is required to achieve, we will merit the world's respect, and ultimately affection. But if we shun our vocation and choose division, then Netflix's anti-Semitic films will be the least of our problems. To elaborate on the topic, and to get a more historic perspective on the significance of unity precisely for the Jewish people, read my book The Jewish Choice, Unity or Anti-Semitism. My new article on LinkedIn, Billboards in the UK, a wake-up call to British Jews. The billboards that recently appeared in the UK, emblazoned with the title "Normal People Boycott Israel," are a reminder to UK Jews that hatred toward the world's only Jewish state is alive and kicking in Britain. The slogan on the boards, which references Sally Rooney's decision to deny Israeli publishers the rights to her latest book, obviously seeks to normalize boycotts of the Jewish state. Such attacks as these in Britain are hardly new, and they are becoming ever more frequent. During the last Gaza conflict, UK Jews were not only subjected to anti-Israeli sentiments, but also to overt anti-Semitism, including threats of sexual violence and assault leveled against them. This has led many UK Jews to realise that anti-Semitism in the UK has become an ever-present entity within British life, as a Jerusalem Post story recently put it. Therefore, instead of waiting for the next incident to occur, Britain's Jews must act now, and there is much they can do. UK Jews proved, in the face of the threat posed by Jeremy Corbyn, just how resilient they are when they stand united in the face of threats to them and to the State of Israel. This unity has always been the refuge of our people in the face of every menace. Today, as well, it should be our first port of call. The lesson we must learn from our past and from our leaders throughout the ages is that we should not wait for suffering, threats, and boycotts to drive us toward unity. Rather, we should want to unite in a spirit of friendship and cooperation all the time and every single day. The head of the Board of British Deputies, Marie van der Zyl, correctly recognised that the unity we showed in the face of Corbyn's threat was something to be maintained. However, we should not only try to maintain that connection, but enhance it in both quality and quantity. If we Jews strengthen the ties between us, without denying the many differences between us, but by rising above them, we will truly become a light unto nations. Then, unity will remedy all of our problems. As Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov quite clearly states in the Book of Consciousness, we are commanded at each generation to strengthen the unity among us, so our enemies do not rule over us. If we come together in the spirit of a family, where we are concerned with the well-being of each family member, we will very quickly witness positive changes. The ghoulish specter of anti-Semitism will finally be vanquished, and our unity will become an example for the rest of the people to follow. We see that despite the billions of pounds spent on trying to deal with anti-Semitism, conferences on the subject, high-profile supporters of Israel, government pledges, absolutely nothing is effective in dealing with the problem. On the contrary, despite the efforts, anti-Semitism and hatred for the Jewish state are on the rise worldwide. The reason for this is that we are not tackling the problem at its root, which is the continual alienation and disunity among us. Only when we address this state and rectify it by building good relations among us, will we be able to stop anti-Semitism dead in its tracks. Everything is in our hands. We have the power to change everything, and the time to act towards it is now. Michael Leitman, on Quora, can you influence plant growth with your thoughts? We influence not only plants with our thoughts, but also animals and even stones. However, we cannot yet examine such phenomena. There is absolute interconnection and interaction between all parts of creation. If we saw this network of forces, we would find that only we humans are a negative, harmful element in this system of forces. Neither inanimate, vegetative or animate forms of matter have free will. They have no egoism, that is a desire to enjoy at the expense of the other. They exist according to the laws that nature has embedded into them. Humans, however, due to our free will and our egoism, become the only harmful elements in nature. Based on a talk, CAB TV's Close-Up Reference Point, with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. Not suffering but happiness. Comment: most people come to Kabbalah because of suffering. As we engage in Kabbalah and rise above our egoism, we begin to look at everything from a different angle. It turns out that the suffering remains the same, we just look at it differently, but the problems do not disappear. My response: if you begin to consider the emerging problems not as suffering, but on the contrary, as a means of attracting you to the Creator, to the highest goal, then why treat them as suffering? These are then states that push you toward development. But what else? After all, you are sheer egoism. Well, how can you be nudged forward, if not by being pricked? Comment: although I perceive suffering differently, it still remains. My response: no, it doesn't stay. You look at it differently, You have changed your point of view. Soon, instead of suffering, it will seem to you that this is not suffering but happiness. After all, it all depends on the purpose it comes for and what it ties you to. Let's say a person works hard and digs a deep hole, but if he earned $1 million for this work, then this is no longer suffering. This is an opportunity to rise to the next level. But he continues, should he dig this hole? Yes, he should. Are you looking at the condition or are you looking at the result? By studying Kabbalah, you become attached to the result and see what you are earning at the same time, what reward. You are included in the light, included in eternity, infinity, out of your narrow state. And then everything changes for you. But is this world changing with you? Your view of it changes. You begin to understand the depth of its structure, why everything happens this way, and you justify what is happening. But the world itself does not change. And then it will change too. From Cab TV's video conference. Recognize the power of nature over us. The wisdom of Kabbalah speaks of a system of interconnections between all parts of the universe. Today the world has exhausted its straightforward selfish development where we wanted to study and work in order to achieve wealth, power, and other material values. Now all these systems are gradually being depleted. And it turns out that we need to look for what nature offers instead of them. We have always worked within the framework of our nature and cannot get away from it. Therefore, we need to understand what its form is now that is manifesting in the world. Humanity is beginning to comprehend the integral closed whole form of the world. Today, not only Kabbalah, but all other sciences support this attitude toward the world. The only problem is human egoism, which does not agree with this, wants to crush everything under itself, and does not understand that the unfolding integral system is in contradiction with it. Now it must comply with this system according to the law of similarity of properties. Humanity will be obliged to obey this law. Nature will bend us, all, as they say, to oblige. But the whole point is, in what way? Either by realizing its integrity or by suffering. We need to realize that nature is global and integral, and therefore cannot be broken. We will not break it anyway, but will only destroy the natural environment closest to us, and this will cause us irreparable damage, even harm. We must recognize the power of nature over us, study it, and act in its likeness, as today, looking at it we invent various devices. Look at what robotics we are creating. Whatever we do, we learn from nature, rather than pushing our understanding of the world. We do not understand it, we ourselves are derivatives of this world. Egoism is an inert disagreement with the perfection of nature, which is above us, and we ourselves do not understand what forces, connections, laws it controls us with. From Cab TV's The Science of Management, June 23, 2021. Call upon the power of the Creator as help. When the single structure of the common soul split into male and female, the property that binds them, the property of the Creator, disappeared at the same time. Therefore, if we want to unite both parts, we need to invoke a third force, the force of the Creator, to become the glue that connects us to each other. In our time, families are actively breaking up so that we feel the need for their unification and realize that it is possible only by revealing the Creator. It turns out that all of today's disintegration is needed in order to understand Him. Therefore, by uniting and demanding to understand the Creator, we create the correct connection in the family and reveal the Creator between us. That is, the expansion of egoism, its growth, and the disintegration of the family occurs with the purpose of making us feel the need for the Creator who will make peace between us. Question: but why with such cruel methods? Answer: these methods are not cruel, but are exactly what happened at the very beginning of creation when the Creator disappeared and left us, alone against each other. And now that we have gone through this story, we see how ready we are to distance from each other, artificial insemination, women here, men there, unisex, you don't know who and what. We are approaching a state where we will not need each other at all. All this is necessary in order for us to emerge from the initial state to the realization that we need the Creator to unite us, and to be drawn to one another for the sake of His revelation and not for each other's sake. The Creator is what glues us together, that is, the power of love and bestowal is what we lack and what we can find among ourselves if we want. From Cab TV's close-up. Emancipation. A key to the ascent to the upper world. Comment: Balhasulam says that all of humanity and all of nature that we are a part of is one mechanism in which every cogwheel impacts another. The goal of the wisdom of Kabbalah is to bring all the cogwheels to a certain balance, so not to harm others but to bring them pleasure. My response: imagine billions of cogwheels that do not turn separately but turn as one man in one direction or another at the same time. At the same time. By that a force that raises them is formed. They do not turn separately, but each one turns together with the others, and by doing so they begin to feel the Creator who is external to them. Question: the nations of the world reach a state of bestowing in order to receive, while the nation of Israel, which means people with the points in the heart, that is, with the question about the meaning of life, work with an intention in addition to that. Does this mean that by doing so they constantly change their intention and by that dictate the general direction to all the nations of the world? Is there some kind of click? If so, when does it happen? When does the nation of Israel begin to turn everyone in one direction? Answer: this is not happening yet, but we hope that soon we will be able to do it. This means that all the people who aim at the Creator will attain a state in which they will begin to feel each other and search for the Creator by mutually cooperating between themselves. Then we will succeed in everything. The whole world will feel our mutual harmonious motion and will cling to us, and thus turn. What is more, humanity will begin to gradually exit the mechanical turning and reach the next level, the feeling of the force that is external to the cogwheels, that is, the level of the Creator. This is called an ascent to the upper world. This is the reason that the key to this level is in keeping the rule of love thy friend as thyself. This process begins with a personal, individual yearning for this state. If we begin to do it, we will soon reach mutual cooperation between us. We will feel the contact we are in, and how this cooperation raises us, how the Creator stands behind us, and how we already begin to enter His feeling. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, July 21, 2019. What you need to learn from the example of the Japanese. Question: in Japan, the number of suicides has turned out to be greater than the victims of the coronavirus for the whole of 2020. The reason for this is clear: economic difficulties, layoffs from work. The Japanese are very responsible. They have a painful state of responsibility. Please tell me, what is it? We always talk about the crown, coronavirus, and here there are more suicides in a month than in the entire period of corona. Answer: the fact is that this is the character of a people who must be tied to some common cultural, historical, national values, and cannot feel free. There is no freedom for them. They live on a small island to this day. To this day they are cut off from the world at heart. They can travel, take photos of everything everywhere. But they have not left the mental and psychological development of being isolated on their small islands, in the small archipelago of Japan, plus the defeat in the Second World War with the atomic bomb and so on. That is, they have a very huge pressure. Working for them is like forgetting. In this they simply find themselves. And now, when no one needs this work, everyone is being fired there. And they cannot live without it because it is like an umbilical cord to the mother, they are so attached to their work. After all, They have everything at work, and therefore for them if there is no work, then there is nothing to exist for. Work. When you have to get up, you have to go to work, you come after it, and you have a drink, maybe some glass of your own sake and go to bed. In general, this is your life. There is still the family, but all this is still within the same framework. I cannot imagine Japan existing in a different rhythm. I cannot imagine why the government doesn't organize fake jobs for both men and women in order to organize them in this way. After all, a free Japanese is nonsense. That is impossible. You see how they walk, how they drive. They can't do it any other way. For them, all these clear lines of conduct are necessary. Question: this is what we are talking about, the Japanese. But there are a million suicides every year in the world. People commit suicide. Do you think this phenomenon will continue to grow? Answer: this exists even among animals. Therefore, I believe that when egoism loses the meaning of existence, at any level animal or higher, it makes a calculation: is it worth living or not? Question: but in principle is this a loss of the meaning of life by and large? Is that the whole point? Answer: of course, life does not pay for itself. Question: so in order for a person not to commit suicide, he must have such a meaning of life that is eternal? Answer: no, not eternal. But at least the pleasure, the fulfillment, I get eventually exceeds the costs. That is, I am left with some kind of positive balance. Otherwise, what is the point of living? Just because I'm afraid of dying? So I'm not afraid? Question: how do you feel about the fact that there is a suicide gene? They say that American scientists have found 22 suicide genes. If we remember Hemingway, then his father, sister, brother and granddaughter all committed suicide. There were 5 deaths for 3 generations. Does this suicide gene exist? Answer: gene, I do not know, I am not strong in this matter, but there is a predisposition to this, of course. And the Japanese have it, and there are such peoples, such tribes, such times, and so on. Question: and how to get out, how to defeat, either this predisposition or the gene? Answer: meaning. Question: only the search for meaning? Answer: only. And how else? Because the meaning of life and its correct implementation are already leading you to a new life. You don't have to die or imagine anything. You will now see your future world in this life. Please, everything is in front of you. It only depends on the correct implementation. Question: what is the meaning of life? Answer: the meaning of life is to change your nature from receiving to giving, from hatred to love, from rejection to drawing closer to others. And then you will feel a completely different existence in these properties. And it will be the reverse world. You will find fulfillment in filling others. And there will be no disappointment in this. We will come to this. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, December 7, 2020.